Bonnie and Friends. Bonnie Simon. Jacaranda FM.
What a song, Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Jacaranda FM, my in-studio guest Joe Parker, Barney and Friends. Why that song, Joe, man? It's just goosebump stuff. I mean, when I heard that the first time, I remember playing that for the first time on radio, on vinyl still, in the 80s, and just an incredible band, the way they wrote their lyrics. They got into politics as well. There was a certain stage. I think when Maggie won it for the third time in a row or whatever, they started writing songs about politics and stuff. But why do you like them so much?
Well, it came out pretty just shortly after, you know, being on the circuit for 14 years and we had a five-piece band. Our last gig as a five-piece band was at Spats at the Sant and Son in July 1985. And two of the guys who had been in the band, the bass player and the guitarist, had moved back to Cape Town, and it was a few months later I'd actually gone down there, and I'd heard the song on the radio, but when I saw them play it, it kind of just connected with me, because, you know, like, the music of the 80s, very well constructed, a lot of ways very simple, but I think production was key there, and it's just such a great beat. I mean, you know, just think about the words. Don't mean a huge amount. I think they might have meant quite a lot in the 80s. But it's still, whenever I hear it, I just get this nice feeling. You know, it's just good music.
They still have to come out here one day, Tears for Fears. That'll be nice to bring them out. Then you went off compulsory military service. Mm. So you got your little, how old were you when you went? 18?
20, no. You were supposed to go when you straight out of school. But I'd been in the Merchant Navy.
That's right.
And I'd been married. And it was deferred and deferred and deferred. And then eventually went in 1973, went to Kimberley. I did 3 months in Kimberley. Then went to Durban for the balance of that. You know, so I was at Hotel Command, as they used to call it, down in Durban.
What was the army life? I mean, you had your experience in the Merchant Navy. Army, totally different. And then you obviously met some weird characters in the army.
In the army, the army was just another surreal world. You know, I mean, the basics, everyone did the same basics. I was a bit older. So I'm not trying to big note myself, but, your NCOs and you know, the people that were kicking your backside, a little bit brighter than them. So I kind of manipulated it a little bit, you know. And one of the funny things that happened was I got posted to Durban and I was a sergeant's clerk there. And one of the first things I had to do was to redo their roll call books. And I just left my name off. So I was at home every night there. It was ridiculous.
clever. And so you did, it was 9 months in those days.
Correct.
And then you did any camps?
I did a couple of camps, but they were done out at Island View. You know, I used to sit in the office by myself, like from 8 in the morning till 4. And just did admin, you know, and I never went away. I never went to the border. So, and I was then working at night. I was working at the Lonsdale Hotel and the places like the Cumberland Hotel in Durban, Jolly Roger down in Durban. So I was already working every night. Yeah.
And did you, when you're lying in your tent at night in Kimberley, where you started there, did you tell any jokes?
No.
Nothing at all?
No, I had a guitar. There was a guy called Dave Constance. I wonder if he's still around. He had a guitar and we used to sing stuff, the music of the day, you know, Beatles songs and, you know, early Eagles and that type of thing, you know. So that was my kind of entertainment thing. And then, of course, I had done comedy before. Mm. I remember going to the NCO's mess at Verda and doing a sergeant there had seen me in Pretoria. I'd been working in Pretoria and said, come and entertain the guys here. And, of course, being completely unsophisticated, I just took the complete piss out of the Afrikaans guys because that's what you did in those days. And, of course, they were all Afrikaans, not realizing they didn't think it was very funny. But I had a few drinks and they didn't like me after that, you know. But you know what? We move on.
I saw you once. We were discussing the venue, but I remember it was. I was in the army as well. We still had our uniforms on, and we found out about this guy called Joe Parker. I think Cy Sax was there as well one night, and you told jokes about the army, and it's amazing how. You know, we laughed so much. It was a brilliant night, and we kept on going back, the Crest and Hotel. Just the way you got through to a lot of guys, I mean, they came back from the border, and they were a little bit depressed and whatever, and just how you you know, the inspiration and the true stories about the Sergeant Major and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Amazing that you were a great storyteller, and we laughed at your stories rather than one-liners and stuff like that.
Yeah, the Army story was, that was quite popular with people who used to come and watch me because of the fact that at the time everyone was going and, they could relate to everything. And really, it was not made up. It was just relating what had happened to me, the silly things that they made you do, you know, and everyone would come along and laugh and say, oh, that happened to me, you know. So if you're talking about common and shared experiences, you know, that creates, you know, a nice camaraderie and it makes people laugh because you would be taking the mickey out of it all the time. So the Army story became quite a popular part of what I did. And to this day, people say, don't you still do the Army story? And I say, no, because it's not relevant. You know, you, even though you might have a special place in your heart for it, if I told you the same story today, you would just look at me and go, really? Is that what we used to laugh at then? Mm. Because it's no longer relevant.
Sien jy daai boom? Is jy al terug?
Yeah, there you go, exactly. You know, that. Yeah, and then come back and say you went around the wrong way. Or, yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you maybe one day you should organize at your venue here at Monte Casino an army night and get all the guys and talk, you know, because we're going to sit there and go, look, I was shot here. Yeah. Oh, yes, and R1 bullet went through my nostril and it came out this. You know what I mean? Then you brag about, and everybody's been through hell and whatever. But hey, maybe you should look at that.
Yeah, we've spoken about doing just like a bit of a flashback night, you know, a bit of a kind of a nostalgia evening where people just come along. And because over the time I've been doing this, I've got hours of material, which I don't use anymore because of the style of comedy, and which also, you know, is not as funny to me now as it might have been then, and not as relevant, you know, in the style of the way I do things. You know, and of course, I've moved on a little bit. So, I mean, I still realize that it's got huge value for people. I mean, I often go when I've been doing corporate work, you walk into a boardroom and the guys sitting there that used to come and watch you in that varsity. And, you know, they just have that, you have that little connection with them, but you can't recreate that. Yeah. You know, that was important for them then. Now they are who they are and they got a very fond memory of what that was, but it's just, you've moved on, you know.
But there are amazing stories you can tell about South Africa right now, if you think about it. And, you know, especially you look at politics and you can get away with, like you said, the F word and religion and politics. You can do whatever you like on stage now, which is, it's nice to have that bit of freedom, isn't it?
We're very lucky in this country in that, you know, you're not censored on stage. You can say what you like. And I'm not talking about just being vulgar. You know, and comedians who are vulgar will get called on it. That's don't get booked again. Not because I am the censor, but I really want people that are going to entertain the audiences. And if you're not entertaining people and you're just offending them, you're not valuable to us. You know, we're running a business here. But in that being said, you can criticize the government. You can pretty much have your opinion about anything as long as you're entertaining people. People don't really mind. You know, and a lot of the time you're saying a lot of things that they wish they had said.
When did you decide to open your own venue? How long ago was that?
Well, this is not my first or second. It's actually the third venue. We opened a comedy club in Cape Town in 2001 my partner at that time, a guy called Derek Gordon. And it was called Comedy Warehouse in Greenpoint, which is now just the hottest area in Cape Town. Kind of just near Pigalle, across the road from the Protea Hotel. And we struggled our way through it. We couldn't just, you know, we had a nice venue, great comedians, up-and-coming people. But Cape Town is a bit different to Joburg. You know, Cape Town, you can have 200 people booked on a Saturday, and the weather is really nice at 9 o'clock at night. They just stay on the beach, down pitch, you know. Whereas now, you know, you can't book a seat without paying for it, you know. So it's kind of that we've moved on, become a lot more commercial about it. So that was 2001. Closed it in 2003, and then we opened the one in Monty in 2008.
Sure, and every time I walk past there, I feel proud. I'm so proud of what you've done.
Thank you.
For up-and-coming South African musicians also, we're going to talk about that later, but comedians, they know there's a place where they can go, lovely, you can sit down, it's decent, it's spotless inside. I think I've only been there once, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
But I've still got that purple card. Is it still valid?
Absolutely.
Like a membership VIP card. Yeah. But I really think, you know, you let me know exactly who's performing then. You know, I watch Comedy Central and I've discovered amazing talent there, and they've all performed at your venue. How did you sign that deal with the channel?
Well, they approached us in 2011 once they decided to actually open an office here in Johannesburg. And they had the ideas what they wanted to do. And this, that bouncer came and spoke to me. And, you know, what? Because of the fact they didn't realize that there were so many comedians, they felt that they really had to target the high-profile guys. And we made some suggestions around that. And so going from a series which was going to be about six programs, we finished up doing 16 programs. And there were going to be six specials featuring one comedian. We eventually finished up with 16 programs with four comedians on each show. So instead of there being six, we actually showcased 64 guys. And what the great benefit of that was that, first of all, it profiled the club really well. And secondly, probably most importantly, profiled the genre. The fact that people watching the program would realize there was more to stand-up comedy than the few guys that were well-known. I think it was good for Comedy Central as well. And so, but we've got a great relationship with them. And then, I think it's facilitated.
Bonnie and Friends. Bonnie Simon.